We just have, for the Senate this year, we're just going to have one set of budget books for everyone to look on when you're looking up information on different agencies. And what we have done, we're going to set them up in Judy's office. And then when you need one, go in there and more or less check it out. We want to know where they go. And so hopefully you'll get your information, return it, so if someone else needs it, and if someone else needs the same one you have, well, then you'll leave your name there when you take out a book, and that way they will be able to look you up and see if they can look on that book, too. I guess that's the part of being short of money. There isn't a lot of budget books around. Okay, Senator Haskins.
President, you have the floor.
You may.
Members of the Senate, behind us, we have a couple of folks visiting in from Rock Springs, and they just happen to, they live somewhere around one of a tree street, I think, or something like that. Anyway, if you just welcome them to Cheyenne and to the Senate.
Senator Landon.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor, please?
You may.
I have the privilege today, fellow senators, to introduce you to our Wyoming Whammy students who are here from the University of Washington School of Medicine. I'd ask that they maybe all stand up. And I'm going to tell you exactly who we have with us today, ladies and gentlemen. And maybe they could wave as I introduce them. Tyler Quest from Casper, Scott Bibby from Cheyenne, Clay Brown from Star Valley, Michelle Cassidy from Cheyenne, Steve Clements from Gillette, Kimberly Cranford from Alpine, Greg Dolan from Laramie, Eli Harris from Green River, Eric Howell from Sheridan, Elise Lowe from Sheridan, Mary Murdette from Casper, Travis Pekka from Gillette, Tony Pedry, Rock Springs, Sandra Smiley from Douglas, Kevin Sun from Casper, Megan Woodward from Torrington, and please also welcome Tom Norris, Academic Affairs Dean from the University of Washington, and Suzanne Allen, Regional Affairs Dean from the University of Washington, our Whammy students. Welcome to the Senate.
Can you give us some appointments in case?
Welcome to the Senate. We are glad to have you, and we're looking for you forward to you coming back and taking care of us later. Senator Case? Okay. Introduction, reading, and references of bills. Senate File 78, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 78, sponsored by Senator Burns, illegal fish stocking, an act relating to game and fish.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move for introduction of Senate File 78, illegal fish stocking. Mr. President, this bill was a joint TRW bill, and it failed introduction on the House side, mostly because of the fact that it included private waters in there. I have removed that language and brought it over for introduction over here. So all this bill basically does at this point is it increases the penalty from a low misdemeanor to a high misdemeanor for the illegal stocking of fish. It also allows for civil penalties for those people who are found to have stocked illegal fish. It's become a large problem in the state of Wyoming. The most grotesque example may be the dumping of lake trout into Yellowstone Lake, which is causing a fast decrease in the number of cutthroat trout in what is one of their best hatcheries in the world. This is an ongoing problem in the state, and we would like to continue work on this bill, and hopefully I ask for your positive vote on introduction.
Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Elliott?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Meyer-S? Nicholas?
Excused.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Von Platern?
Aye.
President Hines?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 excused.
Senate File 78, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. Senate File 79, first reading of the bill.
Senate File Number 79, sponsored by Senator Sessions, Schools, Continuum of At-Risk Support Services 2, and Act Relating to Public Schools.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. President, I move Senate File 79 for consideration this legislative session. I brought this bill because I want to give you a little bit of history of what we did 2 years ago. Here is the original 59th legislative of the State of Wyoming budget session, and this is what it went. $300,000 went into an at-risk study. It said, we are to evaluate the risk prevention and intervention programs, providing guidance to the state superintendents on necessary programs in undertaking these duties. We are to evaluation of at-risk programs, including the identification of consistent and reliable measures of programs' effectiveness and on through there. We are to evaluate the role of alternative schools. We are to identify different programs appropriately, and within the court-ordered and institutionalized placement policy, established school district and institutional responsibilities. Now, I passed out something on your desk that has Senate File 79 in it. We have put a lot of money in, extra money for our at-risk students. But take a look at the latest compilation of the money just on court-ordered placements that's on your desk. That is not... To me, that's not an evidence of moving forward. Another thing that is not evidence of me, to me, not moving forward, and to many of us, and our parents, and our taxpayers, is that our graduation rate still is not where it should be. And I spent all summer, as many of you have, at risk. We know what to do, and we just need to know if we're doing it or that we're not doing it, and that's what this bill does. It was introduced in the Senate Education Committee, and I'll be really honest, there was a lot of pushback. I redid the bill. I made it far less erroneous. It is just a beginning down the path of trying to understand what's happening with our at-risk and our programs. I have all of this stuff here. Here is the study, guys. Here's this study plus the pages I've taken out of it on Wyoming Continuum of Services for at-risk students. Let's begin this path, down this path of trying to sort this out. And thank you.
Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Elliott?
Elliott?
Aye. Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
No.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Meyer-S?
Aye.
Nicholas excused. Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
No.
Von Platern?
No.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 13 ayes, 16 noes, 1 excused.
Senate file 79, having failed to receive a two-thirds majority vote, Senate file 79 have failed introduction. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are that order. Considerations of bills in general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Martin.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 41. Senate File 41, sponsored by the Education Committee. Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Coe, Jennings, Massey, Sessions, Von Flatern, Senator Co-Chairman. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
COE. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, moving the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a do-pass recommendation. On Senate File 41, there is a Standing Committee Amendment, and I would defer to Senator Massey for the Standing Committee Amendment and the bill.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill in front of us extends the sunset date for the Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program from 2011 to 2016. It also has a second provision, which is over on page 2, and that's the funding that would go along with that. Mr. Chairman, I'll kind of work this thing backwards. The funding is in the budget bill. And so we don't need it in this bill, and that's what the amendment that's in front of the body does, is the Education Committee has essentially removed the funding from the bill. So why don't we just go ahead and get that out of the way, and I'll move Standing Committee Number 1 to Senate File 41 and urge its adoption.
The reading clerk needs to read the amendment.
I have it.
Senate File 41, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3. Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Number 1 to Senate File 41. It removes Section 2 of the bill, the funding, and urges its adoption.
Is there any discussion on the amendment? Are we ready to vote? All those in favor of Senator Massey's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 41, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. Back on the bill. Senator Massey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The purpose, obviously, when we created the program in 2005, was to put a sunset date on it so we have an opportunity to review it. To determine if it's worth continuing with this program. I provided some information to everybody earlier today. It might be buried in a lot of things on the top of your desk. But it says Senate File 41, Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program. It's a one-pager with a report on both sides of that. And just briefly, note the successes that this program has encountered since 2005. 99 Wyoming students have taken advantage of this program, which provides loans to students who wish to get their teaching degree and become certified in four areas, and that's special education, math, science, and foreign language. A couple of years ago, we also added to this program a secondary endorsement in literacy and English as a second language. As this one-page handout demonstrates, Mr. Chairman, 99 students have taken advantage of that and have received these loans, and for the most part have worked their way through the program or are in the process of doing so. The big table that's right smack in the middle there demonstrate where 84 of these teachers have already, or the areas in which they're taking, in the four areas in which they've majored in, and where they've eventually gone and gotten placed. And those towns are located on the left-hand side. I do wish to note, Mr. Chairman, the rare appearance here in front of us of Yoder, which is down at the bottom of that list. And that might help make up for the fact that when all the votes got messed up a couple days ago, my votes got transferred to the senator from that district, and he got the emails as a result of that. underneath that is a listing of where the students themselves have originated from who have gone into the program. And it demonstrates a great deal of dispersal across the state of Wyoming. And that is students from many of our communities around the state have benefited from this program. One other piece of information, Mr. Chairman, that I'll throw out to folks is, has this made a difference in the shortages that we have out there in the state of Wyoming? And the information, the testimony that we received in the Education Committee indicates that indeed it has. For instance, in the 2007-2008 school year, a couple years ago, there were 261 positions in the state of Wyoming in these four areas in which school districts could not get folks who were clearly endorsed in those areas. In other words, they were not fully certified in the core and non-core content areas. This past school year, the one that, that ended last year in 2009, that total had dropped to 227. So that demonstrates that we're making progress. It also demonstrates that there's still a need for these areas throughout the state of Wyoming. So, Mr. Chairman, the Joint Education Interim Committee that reviewed this particular topic has come forward with a recommendation that the sunset date be extended for another 5 years in order to allow this program to continue. And again, the funding for it, which is approximately $600,000 for a biennium, is contained in the budget bill. Be glad to take any questions.
Senator Jennings.
Voted for this in interim and in committee. One of the things that we need to be aware of is that in Colorado, California, Nevada, there's hundreds if not thousands of teachers being laid off. Those teachers hopefully will start to look at Wyoming. When this program was first developed, it was developed because we were on the bottom of the pay scale. We couldn't attract those teachers. Between the funding model, the billions of dollars that we put into education, that's starting to level off. This bill, you can't amend it to take out any. It wouldn't be germane to take out any of the disciplines that are in there. Right now, our worst ones are math, science, and special education. So we should keep an eye on this bill. I'm not asking you not to vote yes, but we should keep an eye on this as it goes forward to make sure that we need all of those disciplines and we're not able to start filling in some of those disciplines from the other states that are laying off teachers.
Is there any further discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 41, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 41 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 45. The reading clerk will read the bill. Senate File Number 45, sponsored by Senator Jennings, School Bus Seatbelts, an act relating to school buses. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cole, Jennings, Massey, Session, Von Flatern, Senator Cole, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Five, there is a standing committee amendment. And is it on?
It is now, yeah.
Well, you keep turning me off, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the committee of the whole rise and report it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 45. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'll defer to Senator Jennings for an explanation of the amendment and the bill.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could we have the clerk read in the amendment, please?
Senate File 45, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 15.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This was a very short, easy bill, and our amendment master in education, easier. All this bill does is fix a problem that we exposed last year with the seat belt school bus bill that passed out of here and got lost. And it appears that we do have seat belts in school buses in Wyoming, and the bus drivers are liable if they would get to pull over for any child that didn't have their seat belt fastened. This is a decision of whether the bus driver is a driver or whether the bus driver is a disciplinarian. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address the amendment. Since there's not a lot of bill here, it's not a lot of an amendment. On page 1, line 15, we delete the word operator and change that to driver. And the reason that we did that is because the other statute addresses driver, and it's just the driver. It's not the school district or anything else that has any liability. It's
Senator Jennings, would you please move the amendment?
That's what my chairman just told me to do.
I could hear him up here and then.
I'd like to move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 on Senate File 45.
Thank you.
And so we changed operator to driver because that's what it is in other statute, page 2, line 2. After action, we deleted the balance of the line. And on page 2, line 3, and we kind of over, some of these kind of overdue here. We deleted lines 3 through 5 because that was already being said in the first part of the bill. And then in page 2, line 6, we deleted that through admissible and added or. So I would ask, if you have any questions on the amendment, I'd ask that we pass the amendment.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Larson.
Is the amendment read in?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senators Jennings' motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 45, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment is passed. Back on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 45, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 45 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 46. Reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 46, sponsored by the School Facilities Committee. School Facilities, Charter Schools, an act relating to charter schools. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cole, Massey, Sessions, Von Flatern, No, Senator Jennings, Senator Co-Chairman.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I would move that when the committee of the whole rise and report to do so with a do-pass recommendation on Senate File 46. This is a select committee bill from school facilities, and I would defer to Senator Massey for an explanation of the standing committee amendment and the bill.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill deals with a longstanding problem we've had with regard to charter schools and how it fits in with the rest of our public school system. And the interim committee, the Select Committee on School Facilities, reviewed that and is coming forward with this solution. Here's the conundrum. Here's the issue that we've been dealing with. As everybody knows, the Supreme Court has required two things of the legislature regarding our school students. One is that we have to provide them with an equal opportunity for an adequate education, and two is that we must do that within safe and efficient school buildings. And just recently, in the last couple of years, the Supreme Court has certified the work and the models that we have put together, indicating that we now are in compliance with the Constitution. The issue comes in is that charter school students, and there's just a handful in the state, there's three charter schools right now in Wyoming, are indeed public school students. And they have the same constitutional right to that basket and to safe and efficient buildings as any other public school student in the state of Wyoming. However, in the process of setting up our statutes regarding the review of school buildings and making sure that they live up to standards, we really haven't included charter schools. And until recently, it just really involved the charter school over in Laramie, but there are two more charter schools in the state, both on the Wind River Indian Reservation. So as a result, again, after looking into this issue, the Select Committee on School Facilities has come forward with this solution. And that is for school districts that have charter schools to review the standards of those buildings in which the charter school students are attending and ensuring that they meet state standards. And whatever facility needs that they have, that they include them, just like with public school students that go to other schools in the school districts, in their school facilities plan that they submit to the School Facilities Commission. The School Facilities Commission then has the responsibility to review those plans and approve them. So, Mr. Chairman, on page 1, lines 14 through 17, and over through lines 3 on page 2, that just simply states that's that particular approach. Until now, we have dealt with the charter school over in Laramie in somewhat of a de facto year-to-year way in the budget bill, and this will simply formalize that approach in the way that we look at all school buildings and students in the state of Wyoming. The amendment that the Education Committee has passed and is passing on with Standing Committee Number 1, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, involves page 2. And before I explain that, I'll ask for that to be read in.
The reading clerk will read the amendment, please. Senate File 46, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3. Senator Massey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 46. Now, following through on the explanation that I just provided, and that is students who attend charter schools are public school students, and they have the same access and need to have the same access to a constitutional education and safe and efficient buildings like any other public school student in the state of Wyoming. The concern of most of the members on the Education Committee is that with the conditions that were in the original bill, lines 5 through 13, indicated that those students would not, in the buildings in which they attended, would not be considered for 5 years. And that is a charter school would need to be in existence for 5 years, have essentially their second charter approved, or the charter approved a second time, and start on their next five-year rotation before they would be considered, before their building needs would be considered. And the education committee's thought on this was, if they're a public school student and they need to be the same access to that constitutional basket and to structural standards like any other public school student, we really can't put it off for 5 years. That their needs need to be met right from the start like any other public school student. So that's the reason for the education committee amendment to remove those three conditions. And what that would leave is, if this body approves that amendment, is that the charter school students as public school students would be treated just like all the others.
Further discussion on the amendment? Senator Coe, I'm trying to turn you on here.
Of this amendment. This is significant, no question about it. Because what we're doing with this amendment is we're putting charter schools, we're tying them in with all the other schools in the state to the School Facilities Commission. That's the potential. So this is a policy decision we have to make. The good senator from Laramie talked about the constitutional ramifications of the basket. These are public school kids in these charter schools. They're counted in the ADM. But what we're doing here is we're saying when a charter school starts up, develop a track record. So it's a policy decision. I think that the good senator from Laramie makes a good point on the constitutionality of the basket having to be delivered. Also, we have to provide safe and adequate facilities. But we are... this is a departure from how we've operated before. And I'll use the Snowy Range Academy in Laramie. It's currently in a Walmart building over there. Is that adequate? If we pass this amendment, the School Facilities Commission can come in and say, no, that's not adequate, so we need to build something for them. So this is a significant amendment, and it's a policy decision of this body. We chose in Education Committee to realize the constitutionality of what we're doing. That's why we passed the amendment. So I think there should be some discussion on this. This is a departure away from how we've been doing business.
Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, when I was reading this, I kept going back and forth, you know, like that, like the picture. You can't tell if it's if the face is out or if the face is concave in, because I could understand why you could say, okay, these are public school kids. You want them in a facility of the same standard and therefore expense as any other school. But the other question that kept arising in my mind is, could that then cause a school district to either end a charter school or refuse to start one because they just don't have the funds to provide the facility for that charter school? So could this, in fact, end up retarding the growth of charter schools or the further existence of some charter schools?
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes. I think this is, I was the dissenting vote on this and on this amendment. I think this is a very dangerous amendment to go to because it's exactly what could happen. What we didn't bring out in the presentation to you today was when a charter school starts, they have to have a contract with the school district. That school district is responsible in that contract to make sure that all of the basket of goods are taken care of. So back to the school in Laramie, that when they sat down, yeah, they might be in an old Walmart building, but there was extensive remodeling and a lot of money spent on that that the state didn't have to put up. All we had to do is we funded them on their block grant double funding for the first year to get them started. So I disagree with the rest of the committee. There's not a constitutional issue because we're protected under that contract with the school board to open the charter school. But what we do under current statute is we give that charter school an opportunity to prove itself. We give them 5 years to go out there and go out and say, look at what we can do. And from everything we see from Snorri Range, they've done it. It's worked out. So now we look at them, they're ready to recharter. And once we deal with the bill, we can go back and talk to what the entire bill does. But right now, this is, like the Senator from Park County said, This is a major, not just a little bit, this is a major policy change with this amendment. We will start to have to provide buildings through the Facilities Commission at the startup, and it will conflict with other statute where it says you have to have a facility before you can have a contract, can't have a contract until you have a facility. So we haven't fixed that. So right now, I would ask you to defeat this amendment.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe it would be helpful if we talk about the horse and then the cart with regard to the Snowy Range Academy. That was the first charter school formed in the state of Wyoming. And, of course, it came along before we even thought about any of these things. So in that contract with the Albany County School District, indeed, they were responsible for going out and finding a building and being able to maintain it. The problem is they couldn't. I mean, they found a building, but they weren't able to maintain it or bring that really up to the state standards. They tried fundraising. They tried to get some additional money from private sources in Laramie. They were able to raise some, but it was a struggle. And then the question started to arise, why do they need to do that for public schools? We cannot delegate constitutional requirements to us through a contract. We can't have school districts say, okay, you have a constitutional requirement, legislature, but we'll get rid of that for you and just simply do a contract that says you don't have to follow it. That's unconstitutional. What we eventually wound up doing with the Snowy Range Academy is in the last two budget bills that came through here, there was funding there that was directed specifically at the charter school in Laramie in order to help them pay their lease, as well as to help them fix up that building, because they couldn't do it themselves, and we took the responsibility of doing that. So that's the important thing to remember, is that in reality, what happened and the experiences at that charter school in Laramie has led up to this particular bill. With regard to the effect on school district decisions, it's not the school district that needs to pay for the upkeep, either routine maintenance, major maintenance, or capital construction of schools. It's ours. It's our responsibility. So school districts aren't going to be influenced financially one way or the other when it comes down to a charter school application. They can, in fact, if they have surplus space in their school district that they aren't using right now, the state's not reimbursing them for the upkeep of it. They could provide that space to a charter school and begin to receive additional state money as a result of that. So if there's any kind of an incentive, there may be a slight one, to actually find charter schools to move into surplus spaces. But whatever commitment that school district makes, and again, it's in conjunction with the School Facilities Commission, the School Facilities Commission, under this amendment, will get involved right away. Okay? Under the present wording in the bill, the School Facilities Commission doesn't get a say in this for 5 years. And so there's now a 5-year commitment by that school district through a contract in which they've committed the state to certain standards and to a building in that town that the School Facilities Commission has no say in. Suddenly, 5 years later, they renew that contract. Boom. The state's right there, and it has to pick up the bill. This way, the School Facilities Commission is involved right away in helping making a determination on where those students are going to go. And finally, Mr. Chairman, in the statutes right now is a requirement that 100% of the major maintenance payments generated by a charter school gets directed at that charter school. Okay, so a lot of this is already in statute.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. The first one is, do we know the impact? And I think charter schools are a good thing, but do we know the impact that it might have in terms of our major maintenance component? The second question is, there are schools in our state that are, I don't even think they're charter schools yet. They're like a Montessori schools and these kinds of things. Would this open the door to a lot of those now becoming charter schools? And if it does, what about the tuition that's paid by those parents that choose to send their children to those kinds of schools? Does that affect this in any way, shape, or form, or is that something totally removed from this particular bill?
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question I would have is, and I'm not sure, Hopefully this is all a question on the amendment, but I'm not absolutely sure because I'm not sure of the amendment yet, I guess. But will this require us somehow to pay for duplications of schools within the same school district if we continue down this line or this path? I guess that's my question.
Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, if I can just follow on with the good senator from the southeast part of the state, his question, and I apologize initially because I have to admit I'm pretty ignorant about charter schools. A lot of people say I'm pretty ignorant about a lot of things. But nevertheless, I guess my question is, and as I'm hearing the discussion, what I'm hearing is that ultimately a charter school, if I understand it right, is approved by the local school district. And that now with this amendment, that once a local charter school district is approved by a local school, that then it falls to the state to build a building for, potentially build a building for that charter school under the school, through the School Facilities Commission? I'm hearing nodding heads, but I need somebody to help me understand how this works. Thank you.
Senator Jennings.
I'll take a stab at both of them. My friend from Fremont County, you have a private school that's charging tuition. They don't fall under this. If for some reason or other they decided that they wanted to petition the school district to become a charter school, then they would be public and there wouldn't be any tuition. Back over to the other two, to start a charter school, you right now under current statute, you have to go to the school district, you have to convince them that there's a need and a reason, you have to show them that you have proper housing, building, and you have to develop the contract with them to run everything. Under this amendment to this bill, right now the bill says that you would, in the end of 5 years, you'd have to go back to recharter, because your charter is only good for 5 years, you'd have to go back to recharter, and at that time, then your facility that you'd had for the last 5 years would fall under the direction of school facilities. School facilities at that time would run an evaluation, grade your building, and to decide if it fits in the group of schools that are already out there. And at that time, they could decide whether or not your facility was adequate or whether it needed to be replaced. What the amendment does is say we're going to take those 5 years away and immediately go to that point. You say that if you go to the school district, you have your contract together, and then you go to a house, you want to find a building to house your charter school in, now you'll have to go to school facilities and have them come up with the building for you. And I know my colleague says I'm wrong, so I hope he can straighten me out where I led you astray.
Senator Von Flanner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't think I'm the colleague you referred to. I'm sure he's ready to take care of this. I did support this in committee, and I support it out here, and I ask you to support it. And the reason I did was that I believe it puts the school board in their mind when they're dealing with somebody that has an application in front of them for a charter school to say, what facility, okay? And they go look at it, and they go, this facility isn't quite up to standards, and according to this bill as amended, you may actually bump one of our schools off the list that's we've been waiting 3 years for. So let's find a better school, a better building. And they'll have that in mind, and the Facilities Commission actually wouldn't step in until the contract and the school is actually open. It's really the board, the local board, that decides the contract. Now, there's an appeals process where they can go to the state and say, we wanted to be a charter school, and they said we couldn't be. And the school, this gives the local school board a little more backing here to say, yes, but the building they're going to choose, which will now fall upon the state to renovate and or build new for them, doesn't meet standards. Why would we want them to have a school with substandard building? This right here gives them that basis to start right away, and as part of the contract, make sure that building is worthy of being a school and won't need rebuilding the next year.
Senator Elliott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am confused. If the senator from Laramie is correct that the provision of the basket is a non-delegable duty of the school districts, then it doesn't make, frankly, to me, a bitter difference whether you have the three requirements in there or not, because if it's not a delegable duty and the school district is hung with it, then they're hung with it from the word go. And that's the problem that I'm having with it. If the Supreme Court decisions say this is a duty of the state and of the district, and it's not delegable to someone else to avoid, I don't care if you have a contract with anybody. I think the senator who last spoke is correct. It will cause any new charter school application to be very closely scrutinized, but it seems to me the obligation, if the Supreme Court interpretation is correct, is with the school district to begin with. Help me understand.
Senator Ross.
Question. And I'm glad I got to at least ask, because hopefully you'll answer this in relationship also with the good senator from the mother county. you mentioned surplus school space. Do we have any idea if there is even any surplus space? Because if there isn't, we're back to the chicken and the egg issue. And the problem with charter getting charter schools going is then they're not going to be able to get going because there isn't any buildings. Or if they could find a Walmart in Torrington or somewhere to open up a charter school, they wouldn't even be able to do it, it sounds like. So I'm just wondering, it's one thing to say, yeah, you can use surplus property, but if there isn't any out there, it really doesn't help the matter much.
Senator Massey.
The constitutional responsibilities, as was raised by the senator from Carbon County, we can't delegate that, and school districts can't delegate it. And so all these years after we've given the school districts the authority to create charter schools and the ability to do it, when they've created them and then not accounted for their building space and for the building needs, we've technically been out of compliance with those public school kids. And that's what this amendment attempts to do, is to ensure that they have the same access to that constitutional, safe, and efficient building as any other public schools do. Yes, there is some surplus space. It really depends upon the district and what their population is, when those schools were built. So some school districts have it and some do not. The key, though, to remember in a lot of this discussion is that we're not debating whether or not schools can set up charter schools. We've already done that. It's already in statute. Right now, school districts can entertain applications for charter schools, and they can approve them. There's no oversight by the legislature. They don't have to come back to us to get our permission. They don't have to get the permission of the School Facilities Commission or the Department of Education or the State Board of Education. They can already do it. We gave them that ability and authority when we created the charter school statutes. The question then is, when they exercise that authority that we have given them, when is it that constitutional requirement for safe and efficient buildings kicks in? With the present reading in the bill, it's 5 years at least. Okay? With the amendment, it's right away. Okay? The point of the amendment is that we recognize those students who go to a charter school as being public school students. And therefore, nobody can delegate, and there's nothing in the Constitution that permits us to abrogate or abolish their rights, their constitutional rights, to that building. Now, a couple of other things that I think we need to get clear with regard to process here. When a charter school application is approved, the charter school doesn't start the next day. They have to go and recruit the students. They have to recruit the teachers. It's at least a year away. And what this bill does in the body of it, on page 1 and the top of page 2, is that when that charter school is formed, The school districts are required to immediately go to the School Facilities Commission and start talking to them about space. So those decisions about surplus space, or do they have to go out in the community to lease or to rent, which, by the way, a lot of school districts already do for students. Those who don't have sufficient space within school district-owned buildings already do that. Or if there's a desire for a new building, which would be hard to imagine, because a new building would have to have an awful lot of students in a charter school, and we've never formed any like that. But the School Facilities Commission has an opportunity to begin looking at those needs, working with the school district, and putting it in the school facilities plan. And as soon as it's in the school facilities plan, then it gets ranked by the School Facilities Commission from anywhere from 1 to 340 as to what the capital construction and major maintenance needs are of that particular building. So there's a process that we're plugging in, and we're telling the School Facilities Commission and the district, start getting on that process right away. A couple of other points. The present law prohibits taking a private school and turning it into a charter school. They can't do that. Instead, the charter school applicants have to come forward and talk about an innovative curriculum for the students who are presently going to a public school. So they can't consider a private school and try to bring it into a public school as sort of a de facto private school. I hope that I've answered most. And there's no duplication with regard to schools. In other words, because they immediately go to the School Facilities Commission, then the amount of square space that those students require will immediately go into a plan here. There's no duplication of that. There's no duplication of various schools. And finally, one thing to keep in mind, there's another way to get a charter school, and it's called schools of choice. And there are some communities, and one in particular, that have worked very hard on schools of choice. They're not charter schools because it was the school district that took the initiative to provide different approaches to curriculum development, especially in elementary schools, in order to allow parents to have a choice as to where they want to send those children and those students. The School Facilities Commission, for the most part, takes into account those choices when they make decisions as to what the school facility, what the facility needs are of those schools. So in a lot of ways, we're already doing it. It's just with schools of choice and not with charter schools. I know it's a tough decision to make. I just ask you to kind of keep in mind what our constitutional requirements are.
Senator Sessions.
Chairman, I think we need another to look at this maybe tomorrow in if this amendment passes, because my concern right now is that we talk about a constitutional right of children to go into a decent school, and that's in the charter school laws. That's in our – it's in everywhere. But we have schools out there that have waited for how long for their school to be renovated and rebuilt, or new schools. They have a constitutional right, too, and that right is not to let a charter school application jump ahead of them. So if we come back and it goes in and a charter school goes into line along with everybody else, fine, and it'll work its way up. But it has to be perfectly clear that it does not jump in front of some of those districts, a lot of districts, that have waited years to have those schools done. And I don't know if it will or it will not, but if we have to make it perfectly clear, it will not. So was this ever discussed? I'm sorry I missed the meeting. I was in another committee. But was this discussed? Where in the – are we obligated to put them right up there front? And then that means under the restrictions of the money that it bumps somebody else down, or will they go into line with everybody else at the bottom?
Senator Coe.
Well, Chairman, to try to answer that question, they wouldn't bump anybody because they'd go into the scoring system that School Facilities Commission uses. They'd go in and analyze the facility, see if it's adequate, see what the life safety is of it, and that would be put evaluated like all the other 2,200 buildings we have in the state or whatever it is. At least I think I have that right. Just a couple comments. Charter schools have historically not been favored strongly by districts. It's just that simple. It's always been a tough process to get a charter school charter, I guess is what the word would be from the district. The only question I have, the biggest concern I have about the amendment, and I think you should support the amendment now, but I think I'm going to try to bring something back on second reading. I'm concerned about the academic goals and objectives that get taken out, because we basically have school facilities come in, maybe build a building for a charter school. We don't know what the performance, what's going to go on within that charter school until we have a track record. Somehow, that's the biggest concern I have about the amendment. And I might try to bring something back tomorrow if we pass it, and I think we should pass this right now. Goals and objectives, student performance, we don't know how well that charter school is going to perform, remembering that they take the POS test just like everybody else, the whole thing just like any other public student out there. So I'd urge that you pass this amendment now. I'd like to try to come back on second reading with an amendment that analyzes performance.
Senator Burns.
Well, Mr. Chairman, now I'm actually after the senators from Laramie's points. Now I'm actually more concerned both by the amendment and the bill, because if this allows charter schools to or it says charter schools have to meet the building standards of every other school, and if we have a constitutional mandate to provide those same building standards as any other school, and yet I don't see any provision in this bill that tells that sets up the criteria for the school facilities commission. What I don't understand here is it doesn't tell them where to seat them in that list between 1 and 340. It sounds to me that this amendment actually is going to hurt the formation of any additional charter schools. The thing about, in my mind, is charter schools are voluntary. People go to charter schools because they're not satisfied with what they're getting in the regular public school, which puts them naturally, it's a natural friction and natural tension with the school board. And as the good senator right in front of me here said, it actually may put them in competition for those school funding dollars. So the other question I have, without the amendment, either with or without the amendment, what happens if you start a charter school and you're 5 years down the line and the School Facilities Commission still hasn't addressed your needs? Does your charter school have to shut down because you haven't met the building needs?
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's not going to be any kind of jumping ahead of other schools on the list. Perhaps there's a misconception about what this list does. There aren't any schools on that list right now which are out of constitutional compliance. If there were, we'd be sued. We'd be in court right now. That list is just simply a ranking of what the various needs are, and we got to take care of those needs. The Supreme Court didn't say, well, if you don't have enough money, then it's okay, you don't have to take care of these buildings, or you only have to do $50 or $100 million a year. They came forward and said, you have to set the standards, you have to determine what every student is eligible for, and then you have to provide buildings that meet those needs. And right now in Wyoming, those buildings meet the needs. And what you're going to see in an appropriation bill that comes out is some capital construction projects and component and major maintenance requirements, and also some building of component parts in those school districts in order to ensure that they meet those standards. So it's not a matter of where you fall on the list and pushing somebody else down. If the school in your district has a need and does not meet constitutional requirement, they're going to come in a bill to us in order to ask us to appropriate the money for it, period, regardless of where they are on that list. Okay? That's the direction that we gave in statute to the School Facilities Commission. That's the purpose of the Select Committee on School Facilities, is to ensure that constitutional list and that the commission has complied with it.
and that that building needs, those building needs come to us. So a charter school, who knows, maybe at some point it may appear on the needs of buildings that come to us. Okay? But it's not going to be because it kicks somebody else off the list. It's just simply going to be added to the list and a requirement for us to take a look at. So there's no building jumping that's going to go on as a result of this. I'm not sure what this other one. Academic goals and objectives. With regard to must be, as far as the criteria that's being used, sorry, I'm trying to read my cryptic notes here and try to keep up with this. Over on page 2, lines 2 and 3, are the statutory citations for the process of determining building needs in Wyoming for every public school student. And what this bill says is that it just applies to these charter school students as well. Okay? So the criteria for whatever building the School Facilities Commission and the school district decide upon, okay, they're going to be using that criteria to determine if there are any building needs that they have to come to us for. Now, quite often, the major maintenance payments take care of an awful lot of the structural needs and bring us up to standards. And we don't see it as a special bill because the major maintenance payments go on to the districts to take care of it. And that's what it's going to be, I suspect, in most instances with the charter schools. But there's already a well-established process in place that will allow these folks to go right into the system. And finally, you know, with regard to academic achievement, I think that was the point I was getting. There are a lot of schools today in Wyoming who are now the second or third year based upon No Child Left Behind, and I guess we can get into a whole debate about that. But nevertheless, they've been determined as to be underperforming, not adequate, inadequate. Some of them are going on their third year. I don't hear anybody saying, well, let's take away their buildings. Okay, let's not fix up their buildings. Okay, it has nothing to do with academic performance. Okay? You can't take a student and put him in an inadequate building and somehow expect him to perform better. Okay? That's the whole point of safe and efficient buildings, is so that when students go into them, a public school student, they're going to have the best chance to succeed academically. Okay? So we shouldn't be tying buildings to performance.
Further discussion? Senator Jennings?
Or commission has a grading procedure. This bill kind of implies that a charter school is going to come into the system with an inadequate building. Or we wouldn't be talking about it. So if they come in with an inadequate building, because if the contract and the agreement and everything with the school district didn't supply an adequate building, so the school facilities comes in and grades it, and it grades it as a bigger need than another school, then what is the guarantee that that charter school doesn't appear higher in the list? Because we've seen schools that have had remodeling that moved on the list. We've seen a lot of movement in this list for different reasons. So I just want to know what the guarantee is that there won't be a school that would come into the system and the building be deemed inadequate after a grading and have it move up the list.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I was I'm also now on school facilities, and I've been I've been making the last couple meetings. That was not something that was even part of this. I think we're kind of getting our eye off the ball a little bit. That was not something that was discussed. And as far as the buildings that the charter schools have right now are known to be adequate, they're just saying we're doing major maintenance money here. We're not building schools, we're not replacing, we're not jumping lists. That wasn't the topic of discussions here. We're talking about the major maintenance money. And what we just, what I was picking up from the questions, and I'm kind of surprised because the good senator from Natrona County was at those meetings, and we weren't, that's not something that was part of the discussion as far as when we were working this bill in committee. We're strictly looking at major maintenance money providing to keep up these buildings and not jumping lists, not replacing buildings or anything like that. We were just simply looking to maintain a building for these students that are all part of the public school system.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, I guess what I don't get is, with a defined basket of money, and then we bring someone else into that defined basket of money to take up part of it, how can we not displace someone in that basket? We possibly have the next charter school. The thing of it is, we have no place they can go. We have asbestos in the two that were moved out of, huge costs to redo those. At this point, they wanted to stick them in a warehouse, and or they wanted to stick them in a building that someone had purchased and was waiting for the school district to renovate for them. What I'm saying to you is, so what happens if you get this? We approve a charter school in this district. It takes up a certain amount of money, and it would take up a lot amount of money, a lot of money. You put it in that basket of money. You can't tell me that maybe my little guys over there that have waited 6, 7, 8 years that are going to school in a 50-year-old school, it may be deemed adequate, but they've waited their turn. Somebody is not going to get what they've been promised. That's just logic to me, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, it is not given that when a charter school is formed, that those students are going to go into a substandard building. Nobody has ever claimed or said that, and I'm not sure what the evidence of something like that would be. Instead, that's the reason for the School Facilities Commission to get involved. There's already existing criteria in statute that directs the School Facilities Committee to look at the existing space in all schools in making these decisions, as well as expansion decisions in general with regard to schools. We've even given them the authority to come to us and suggest consolidation of schools, like they've done in a few instances. So their entire approach is built upon efficiency. And if there's existing space within a school, or if there's a decent building somewhere in that community, they're going to choose the least costly option in order to put those in order to work with the school district and have those public school students going there. In many instances, you don't see, this body does not see all of the repairs that are done with all the school buildings in the state of Wyoming. I suspect of the list of 300 to 450, 340 to 350, there's probably somewhere between 80 and 100 of those schools that are listed for some kind of repair. Most of the time, it's taken out of major maintenance payments. So I suspect before we even get on a list of capital facilities that come to us for approval, first of all, it's going to be adequate space, and if it's not, it's going to be taking care of major maintenance, which, by the way, we're already paying. Okay, this amendment's not going to affect that whatsoever. And we don't have a defined amount of money we spend every year on schools. That's how we got into the Supreme Court to start with, is we decided that we are only going to put enough money into it. By the way, just out of interest, in 1995 legislative session, my first one down here, and the senator from Natrona County had already been here for nearly half a century. The legislature, it was a long, long debate on capital construction, and the legislature finally agreed to devote to capital construction that year $250,000. And we got sued. So the point is, we don't have a defined basket or a defined amount of money saying, gee, we only have $100 million here. I wonder how many schools we're going to be able to fund. It's the other way around. Okay, so the fact that a charter school is formed isn't going to mean that somebody who constitutionally needs some money to bring their schools up to standards. It's just, we've never done that since we developed this model, and I don't see us starting to do that with charter schools. Remember, school districts have had this responsibility for charter schools longer than we've had this model.
I sense you're ready to vote. All those in favor of Senator Massey's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 46, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Division being called. All those in favor, please rise. Those opposed? The motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. Back on the bill. Yes, sir. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman. On and I think against the bill. Mr. Chairman, I've been listening to this debate carefully. And I think we need to go back and think of the fundamentals. Why is there desire for charter schools? That desire is there because many of our constituents want to have available an alternative in case the public school system fails their children, does not do an adequate job. Now, right, they don't have, and those of us from Natrona County really don't have that much of a dog in the fight. Our school district has been able to accommodate the desire for alternate ways, different approaches to education that will meet some of the problems that some of them have with the traditional schools within the school system in the schools of choice. And I think you're all familiar with that to one degree or another. And we probably won't be much affected in Natrona County one way or another by this bill unless the school board should abandon that policy. And then I think you'll see a big demand for charter schools. But it does strike me that it is useful to have an alternative so that people can get their children educated in a public school system if the traditional system is not working, is not effective for those children. So I approach this bill and say, what does this do to the ability to establish a charter school? And listening to the previous debate, and maybe I've missed something, but listening to the previous debate, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that enactment of this bill has the practical effect of putting another obstacle, and maybe an insurmountable one, in the path of establishing a charter school. If you can't find a facility at a reasonable cost that meets all our standards, and our standards are very high, and the amount of money we've spent in capital construction in a declining enrollment environment reflects the fact that our standards are extraordinarily high, then you can't go and be creative and do some of the things that I've seen done. Put a charter school in an old Walmart building. Put a charter school where our school district put a school of choice in an old restaurant. Put a charter school where our school district put a program in a commercial office building in the downtown area. You won't be able to do that sort of thing, and it will be another major obstacle toward starting charter schools. So my instinct, unless I can be persuaded otherwise, is that as a practical matter, care about some of the legal theories. As a practical matter, what this bill does is give those who are opposed to charter schools, who are opposed to the possibility of competition if the established schools are not getting the job done, another weapon to prevent competition within the public school system. And for that reason, Mr. Chairman, I don't think this bill should go beyond third reading here. Maybe there's something here that can be salvaged. I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't kill it today. Maybe we should take a little more time and be sure what we're doing. But I think this has the potential for setting back any attempt to establish charter schools, and for that reason should not in its current form pass.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was kind of anticipating what I was going to have to say to defend the bill, but I never thought I would have to stand up to defend my longstanding support for charter schools. I've been as strong an advocate as anyone in this legislature for charter schools and to keep those decisions with school districts in the state. So I'm certainly not going to get behind a bill that's going to retard the formation of charter schools. Here are some key points I think we have to keep in mind. The school districts aren't responsible for the standards. The state of Wyoming is responsible for building standards. So when a school district has a charter school application in front of it, it doesn't have to worry about finding a building or finding a place in their school that meets state building standards. In fact, this particular bill takes that weight off their shoulders. Okay, right now, they would have to worry about that because there's no requirements in state statute for public school students who attend charter schools to go to a building that meets state standards. And so the school districts have to fill that breach. They're the ones that have to think about that as they're looking through an application. Okay. With the passage of this bill, the state steps in, and especially with the adoption of this amendment, and says to school districts, okay, you make a decision, okay, for creating a charter school. And the statutes are also clear on how charter schools and why they're formed. It's for curriculum development. And the Snowy Range Academy was created not because parents were disgusted with the Albany County School District. They were positively affected with the notion of an innovative curriculum based upon literature. And that's the reason the Snowy Range Academy was formed. So this bill does the opposite. It takes and makes it very clear in statute, school districts don't have the responsibility for providing a building that meets state standards. That's up to the state, the School Facilities Commission, working with school districts through these school facilities plans. And the final thing I just want to point out, Mr. Chairman, if we were to kill this bill, then we're right back to the question we have right now. Okay, how can we constitutionally permit public school students to attend school in buildings that are substandard?
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm going to support this bill. But the one question I have, there is a situation I think that could exist where my colleague from Natrona County is right, and that's if you had a school district that had X amount of space, and then because the charter schools were very successful and they became unusable to them, then they would not be paid the major maintenance dollars to maintain it. And that could possibly happen, but that's a remote possibility. And I think that by putting this language in here, you really are stepping up for charter schools. But there is some sort of a disincentive there to the school districts. If, in fact, they should lose usable space, then they wouldn't get the major maintenance money.
Further discussion on the bill. Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 46, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 46 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole be at ease for 15 minutes. Or to the sound of the gavel, whatever comes first, for the purpose of staff morale. Staff has the right of way.
Hey, Chucky, look at this. My wife sent this to me. Just read the headline. Just read the headline. Maybe what I wrote. You saw a picture of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's had the same thing.
Really?
Yeah. Go in and out.
Thank you.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order? You don't have 16. Senator Cooper? Senator Cooper? The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 19. The reading clerk will read the bill. Senate File Number 19, sponsored by Senator Ross, DUI impairment period and period for enhanced penalties, and act relating to driving under the influence. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Burns, S. Myers, Perkins, Ross, and Session, Senator Ross, Chairman. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 19, DUI impairment period and periods for enhanced penalties. There is a standing committee amendment, and I ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 19, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 6.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ross.
I will move the Standing Committee Amendment in a moment, but I'd like to at least walk the body through the salient components of this bill. This bill, as I explained to you on introduction, has several major components, the first of which is that it brings in other substances other than alcohol into the driving while impaired statutes. We all know that right now in the law it is illegal to drive under the influence of certain controlled substances, but there is an ever-changing landscape with regards to things that people are putting in their bodies, including huffing different materials or ingesting certain different things. So what this bill does is go in initially on page 2 and add into the definitions with regards to controlled substance, any other drug or psychoactive substance, or any combinations of these substances that impair a person's physical or mental faculties. We then also provide for chemical testing in the bill, so you can test those. Now, the question is, how do you test them? Well, you can't use a breathalyzer machine for that. It's going to be a blood test. But if the officer determines that the person is under the influence of something other than alcohol, has the right to have them take a blood test. The second component of this bill is the implementation of a two-hour rule, and that's on page 3, Romanette double I. Well, what does that mean? Well, a two-hour rule, basically what this will do is to say that any alcohol test, BAC test, within 2 hours is presumptive of your inability to drive or that you were driving well. Right now, we don't have any kind of statute with regards to the two-hour or any sort of presumption. What you have is what you see on page 4 at the top of the page, which just basically says now in the current state of the law that if a test is done or obtained more than 3 hours after the alleged violation, it still can be included. Well, what does that mean? Well, that's where you get into these fights in court over experts in trying to extrapolate back how or how high one's blood alcohol was at the time they drove. What this statute will do is say if the test is done within 2 hours, that is what the courts will use to determine whether or not you were driving while impaired. And then on page 4, we take that back to 2, so we still say that any other test, if it's taken outside of 2 hours, can still come in. But you will have those debates at that point in time about whether or not the person had what the person's blood alcohol was at the time of the offense. Now, why the two-hour rule? The two-hour rule, as I explained to you on introduction, is an attempt to get at the chug-a-lug defense. An individual gets in the car, slams in three or four Jack Daniels and Cokes right before he gets in, and then argues to the court, well, my blood alcohol actually at the time I was picked up was a lot lower. May have been a lot higher 20 minutes later. But this is an attempt to get at that, which seems to be, by all accounts, a potential loophole for people to be able to get out of a DUI. Now, right now, the current language says within 2 hours of being in actual physical control following a lawful arrest resulting from a valid traffic stop. There is some question about, I've heard some question about language on that. There is the situation, and we do want to provide for one's right if, in fact, they drank after they drove. Person drives home, comes into their house, and has a couple of belts, and then the officer comes to the door because of some ready report or something and says, you were driving bad. So that we don't really change that. The next component of the bill is to expand out the look-back period with regard to how far back you look for multiple convictions. The current law is, second offense, third offense, fourth offense within 5 years. This expands this, the current state of the bill expands it out to 10 years. So then you would have 2 and 10, 3 and 10, 4 and 10. On page 7 of the bill, we bring in the youthful offender statute on page 7, top 315234, same kind of thing. And then a definition also of of other controlled substances. Now, at this point in time, Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. It looks like a really lengthy amendment, but it's really quite simple. What the amendment does is two things. First of all, what it does is it goes in, when we're talking about the look-back period, it changes it to the date of the offense rather than the date of conviction. Testimony in committee was that it takes maybe a year or more before you actually get a conviction. So we added language on pages 4, 5, and 6 that says an offense resulting in a conviction. So that's the time, the date that you would be working on. That was suggested by the Wyoming Prosecutors Association. The committee unanimously agreed. It was brought to our attention that if you take out, the look-back period to 10 years, you need to also deal with the driver's license suspension. And so that's why you see 317, 127, and 128 in the bill. So that it correlates for the Department of Transportation with regards to the suspension of the driver's license. Remember that driver's licenses are not suspended by the court. That's done through the Department of Transportation, and that's why we had to bring in those two pieces of the statute to make sure it matched the bill with regards to the expansion out to 10 years. That, in essence, is the bill, and I stand for question. Hope for your favorable consideration of this bill.
We're on the discussion of the amendment. Further discussion on the amendment? question being called. All those in favor of Senator Ross' motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 19, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a question on the bill really relating to possible unintended consequences. I'm looking at page 2, lines 10 through 12, where we're defining as saying controlled substance includes any drug or psychoactive substance or any combination of these substances capable of impairing a person's physical or mental faculties. Capable of impairing. I think I understand where you're trying to go with that. The concern I have is that the typical antihistamine and many of the cold remedies that we all take for relief of symptoms of hay fever, relief of symptoms of cold, is capable of causing people to be drowsy. And you'll often see a caution on the side of those boxes not to drive after using one of those until you found out what effect it has on you. So right in the label that you get with the drug, it's warning you it can impair your facilities. It's capable of it. It may or may not actually do it. But with the language as written, are we then potentially going to nail anybody who takes a cold remedy, who takes an antihistamine, and then drives? And I think, Mr. Chairman, most people are pretty responsible about if those things really make them too sleepy to drive, they don't. We all make mistakes sometimes that way, and we have to struggle a little bit. But I wonder if there is a way of achieving what the sponsor wants without getting into that trouble, or am I seeing something there that isn't there?
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would refer you also to page 7, lines 22 and 24 in the same vein that the good senator from Natrona County talked about. With that definition, I would submit to you that there are lists of hundreds of prescription drugs that people with various conditions will be taking on a regular basis. Now, when you say capable of impairing, that takes almost all of them. And I think you need to find some other language regarding that to eliminate. And if a person is taking prescription drugs and it's impairing them, they shouldn't be driving either. And I understand that. But when you say capable of impairing, I think you've got a situation there that any time somebody's pulled over and could then have any trace of any prescription drugs, of which there's a list of hundreds, which are capable of impairing a person's physical or mental facilities. So I think you need to kind of stretch, find something else to say there.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to the two questions asked by the good senators, ultimately you look at this, the word capable is, as you recognize, there may be any number of substances that are capable of rendering you unable to drive safely. And I believe the corrector on that is on page 2, lines 10 and 11. You under the influence of a controlled substance. And the controlled substance is now that defined term, which includes that wide range of all the prescriptions and over-the-counter medications and even the things we'd never believed that people would inhale or do otherwise that would be capable of making them. But when you look at lines 10 and 11, you have to have done that to a degree which renders him incapable of driving safely. And so in those things, there's not going to be a breathalyzer. There's not going to be an element that causes that. There's going to be a probable cause because of weaving or erratic behavior, and then there's probably going to be some kind of field sobriety test if that comes to the attention of the officer. And it's that field sobriety test and the stigmas and those other physical events that you're going to have, but the officer will determine then at that point whether or not that controlled substance has rendered you incapable of operating the motor vehicle, what's the language say, to a degree which renders you incapable of safely driving. And so officers have done that for years with alcohol. They're trained on how to do that. And so that ultimately, if a substance, it's hard to say that you can't take a substance that's incapable of making you able to drive it safely. I mean, it has to be broad range. If we're going to do that, and certainly we can have that discussion about whether or not controlled substances ought to be expanded in that regard, but the safety limit is that there will be some kind of physical exam or test which the officer would make you do that under which he would determine whether or not you're capable of driving safely.
Senator Bebout.
Some of it's existing law, and some of it is some new language that complies or that conforms with existing law. And it talks about to a degree which renders him incapable of safely driving. And we talk about something that has physical control of the vehicle. The question an attorney up in my county has asked is if, and I have to admit that I might have done this maybe once in my life where I had two drinks, which was more than I should have had, and I slept in my car and didn't go anywhere. There have been prosecuting attorneys that are saying you had physical control of that car, even though you didn't drive. In fact, some prosecuting attorneys are watching you leave an establishment. If you have the keys in your pocket and your car's over there, they're saying that you have physical control of that vehicle, possibly. And I just want to be sure that maybe there's some language you could put in there that, you know, if they're driving, that's one thing. But if they have control of the vehicle, maybe we need to think about some language. It makes that better.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the good senator from Fremont County is absolutely correct. But that, with regard to what constitutes control of a motor vehicle, that is the result of Supreme Court opinions with regard to what constitutes control, and it's been deemed and determined that if you're in the cases that I've seen anyway, you're in your car and you may be even in the back seat. If you have your keys on you, more than likely they deem that to be in control of your motor vehicle. Now, is that a prudent thing to do, to not drive? Yes. Is there a way to get at that? It's pretty difficult. Depends on how they got there. Were they so intoxicated that they pulled off to the side of the road and then decided to take a nap? Well, at one point in time, they were DUI. So, you know, that's a difficult situation. I have not heard, nor have I seen a case where a person has been charged walking out of the bar and hasn't even gotten into their car. I have had cases, though, where an individual has gotten into their car, never turned it on, said, whoa, been drinking too much, and actually fell asleep in the car and were charged with DUI. Just the hard, cold facts of it. I don't know that. I don't know that this bill actually does anything with regard to that.
Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 19, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Senate File 19 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 23. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File Number 23, sponsored by the Labor Committee, Unemployment Compensation Amendments. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 23 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
The clerk will read the amendment.
Senate File 23, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 4.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment does two things. The first one, as you'll recall, this is the Unemployment Compensation Amendments Bill that has some federal compliance requirements in it that we've just plain got to agree to, or the consequences for our employers are horrendous. One of them is on page 2, line 19, that you see in the Standing Committee Amendment. What happened was the Department of Employment, after bringing this to us, read it again and again and said, you know, it's not in simple English and is confusing. And they brought us the amendment you see here in the Standing Committee Amendment that defines it a good deal clearer so that people are clear that this casual labor, where you aren't subject to the unemployment insurance tax, is amounts for which your remuneration paid is less than $50. Now, our committee discussion in part was, well, that $50, that's not reasonable, that's way too low. And the answer was, yeah, but the feds require it. And it's one of those things where you can't, there's no point in trying to argue with the feds, you aren't going to get anywhere. But this does clear the language up. So that's one thing the Standing Committee Amendment does. The other thing is in the area where we have discretion. Starting on page 4 at line 8, we have a section that what they were doing was when the taxes didn't get paid and the you hire a contractor to redo your house and he's supposed to, with the bill is introduced, he would be supposed to provide a piece of paper to you that's hired him saying he's in compliance with unemployment insurance, and it would facilitate them getting after you if the contractor doesn't pay it. Current law is that if the contractor hires subcontractors, he has to get that information from them and winds up responsible. If the subcontractor doesn't perform, the department was trying to expand that to the people that hire the contractor, and the committee felt that that was unreasonable, that it would cause all of us who are not experts in this part of the law to be hung for things that we really didn't have any reason to know about. And so we proposed to take this section all the way out and leave the law as it exists now. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment or urge its adoption.
Any discussion on the amendment? Questions in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 23, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 23 has passed. We're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, in further explanation of the bill, there are two features in here that are required to comply with the Federal Unemployment Compensation Act. They're the ones we just talked about. And then there are the repealers at the back of the bill. We had some exemptions in our statute that no longer comply with the federal's One of them is we were exempting certain wages for somebody who gets declared to be disabled. We were exempting wages paid to private duty nurses, that sort of thing. They aren't of great moment, but they aren't in compliance, and we got to change them. Rest of the bill is optional, and things that the department recommended to improve the way the system works. Some of it is timing. They want to start some things at the start of a week rather than the middle of the week because that works a lot better mechanically for them. They want the ability to negotiate where somebody owes them money because of an overpayment, to negotiate a repayment schedule without having to go through court. That's on the bottom of page 3. They want to be able to write off bad debts after 8 years, which they said would correspond with the statute of limitations on taking a court action that they face. They want to be able, on page 10, to publish some analyses that do identify state agencies as employers. All those, Mr. Chairman, I think are non-controversial and will improve the program and not be a particular burden on anybody. Mr. Chairman, this is the first one of these few to compliance things that we've had in several years. The feds haven't been as active in this area recently as they used to be. At one point, I can remember where 19 of the past 20 years we'd had one of these bills we had to pass. So we haven't been quite as oppressed recently, but you still do have them, and that's in this bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman. I would urge the body to pass the bill.
Discussion on the bill? Further discussion on the bill? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just looking at the fiscal note, and if I read this right, we get an anticipated revenue increase, and I'm assuming of about less than $40,000. So with that, the assumption is that if we roll over to the feds, we're going to get an extra $40,000. Is that how I read this bill? And if we don't roll over to the feds, we continue to not receive the $40,000?
Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, not all of that's rolling over to the Fed. Some of it is improving our ability to collect debts where there's been an overpayment and we're trying to get it. But some of that is the federal requirements to impose the unemployment tax on certain wages that are not now taxed. We'll get that money. The consequence of not doing it is not that we won't get that money. It's that our employers will lose the exemption they have from the federal full federal unemployment tax, and maybe some other member of the committee has a better memory than I do. We were told how much that was. I think it's in the order of 5-6% of payroll. It's big enough so if it happened, we'd be right down here in a special session fixing it. The consequence is just horrendous. They have been very reasonable. Like here, one of the things was discovered right at the bill introduction deadline last year, so they gave us another year to get it fixed. Feds have been trying to be reasonable, but if we were trying to defy them in this area, they wouldn't be reasonable. And you would promptly find that all your employers were asking you to fix it yesterday.
Further discussion on the bill. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 23, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Senate File 23 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move this Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carried.
reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 41, due pass amended. Senate File 45, due pass amended. Senate File 46, due pass amended. Senate File 19, due pass amended. Senate File 23, due pass amended. Senator Martin, Chairman.
Senator Martin.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Reports from the Standing Committee, from Standing Committees.
February the 11th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 43, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Burns, Coe, Dockstader, Jennings, and S. Meyer, Senator Burns, Chairman. February the 11th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred Senate File 47, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February the 11th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred Senate File 28, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February the 11th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 69, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Burns, Coe, Dockstader, Jennings, and S. Meyer, Senator Burns, Chairman.
Senator Burns.
In Senate File 69, it's the Natural Resource Trust Fund bill, has an appropriation. I'd ask that you re-refer it to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, please.
Senate File 69 will be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, without objections. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate be adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, and I'll have an announcement after all the other announcements in regard to Friday, but we'll do our announcements, and then before we adjourn, I'll...
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet in the regular committee room at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. Senate File 48, the Midwives Bill. Senate File 24, Community-Based In-Home Services. Senate File 61, Health Insurance Reform. And further, Mr. President, that will, if we can get them all done, that'll get rid of all our bills with appropriations on them. And my thinking is to take up any other bills that we have in the committee on Monday. We'll post that notice, so only after we get rid of these three.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet in about 10 minutes, and we'll take up Senate File 36, Gillette Madison Water Project, Senate File 37, Almas Water Bill Construction, Senate File 63, Irrigation District Assessments.
Senator Cole.
Mr. President,
don't talk very long.
Your committee number 4, Education, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock over here in room S11 by the smoking lounge to take up, and we're going to change the order, we're going to take up Senate File 51, Official State Code of the West, and Senate File 39, Post-Secondary Education Options Program.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Corporations Committee number 7 will meet right directly upon adjournment in room S19, top of the stairs, The only bill on our agenda is to finish up Senate File 18, Limited Liability Companies Revision. That was a bill we had in the committee this morning, and we're continuing to finish it up tonight.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number one, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in S1 to consider the following bills: Senate File 8, Medical Support of Children; Senate File 9, Juvenile Detention Facility Standards; and Senate File 30, Sex Offender Registration, Multiple Addresses.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet 15 minutes after the noon adjournment tomorrow in room S18 to take up Senate File 31, Federal Natural Resource Policy Account; Senate File 66, Industrial Siting Amendments; and Senate File 52, Reduced Cigarette Ignition Propensity.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Tomorrow being Friday, there's an interest in what's going to happen, and I've learned that it's kind of foolish to predict. I'll give you the conditions, and I'd like to make your own predictions, but as I look tomorrow, we have 11 or 12 bills. I may have counted fairly close. I think we laid a bill back today. Anyway, we have 11 or 12 bills for third reading. There'll be a consent list, depending on how consenting you are. That shouldn't take too long. We have only those bills that we dealt with just now, in addition to, I think, maybe one was laid back for second reading tomorrow. So that's not a lot. If I listen carefully to the clerk ready and those bills out of committee, I think we're only going to have 3 for committee of the whole tomorrow. So we have a total of 18 bills. That's not a lot. And we're doing really well. I mean, not only are we not behind, we're right up where we need to be. However, there's one committee that, given time constraints, may want to meet briefly, I guess, in the afternoon or whatever. We'll work it out in the morning. But the point of it is, we don't have a lot of work to do tomorrow. I'll be as generous as I can, but we want to keep up. We're keeping up very well. So with that, we'll just do the best we can. And we'll work with whoever in the morning, and we'll make some of these determinations in regard to the time sequence. But 18 bills are for 3 readings of what we have to work on tomorrow.
You've heard the motion that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. The Senate is adjourned.